This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The United States Department of Agriculture wants to further restrict access to SNAP, the Federal Nutrition Assistance Program, and the changes could have a significant impact on people's health and the American economy. The proposed rules would tighten eligibility and restrict the rights of states to provide waivers for some adults. Lindsay Haynes-Maslow is an assistant professor and extension specialist in the Department of Agriculture and Human Sciences at North Carolina State University. She's also the principal investigator for NC State's SNAP education program, Steps to Health. That program is funded by the USDA. She recently wrote a piece about the proposed rule change for the publication Conversation, and we'll share some of those thoughts today. Lindsay, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me back here.
Tell us about the proposed rule changes.
So essentially, on December 20th, our President Trump signed the Farm Bill. So it's about $800 billion a year. And essentially, no changes were made to the SNAP program. There's been a lot of chatter over the last year or two about cuts to this program and making sure people could not apply to be on the program. And essentially, what the USDA did was, on the same day that President Trump signed the bill into law, the USDA proposed a rule limiting the ability for states to apply for waivers for SNAP recipients to essentially get around these work requirements. And work requirements are required for a certain group of individuals in the SNAP program. We call them able-bodied adults without dependents. So these are basically working-age adults without children or kids, and they're ages 18 to 49. And currently, the Farm Bill states that if you have an unemployment rate in an area, this could be a county or town or several towns or counties, that is above 10%, you can actually apply for a waiver that will say you're not required to actually work to be on SNAP. Now, what the proposed rule did was basically say that actually, no, we're going to limit waivers. So you can only apply for a waiver if your unemployment rate is greater than 7%. And additionally, one thing, while you think 3% might not make a huge difference, the impacts on this would actually probably impact 750,000 people across the U.S. Currently, this group of individuals, the adults we're talking about without dependents, there's 3.8 million of them on the SNAP program.
And these unemployment rates also tend to be regional, but I understand that the proposed rules really restrict the kind of geographic limits that can sort of apply to the unemployment rate, right?
Yeah, they're basically trying to make sure that if you have a county that has a high unemployment rate and then you have a county next that's essentially a low unemployment rate, you couldn't group those counties together. But we all know that sometimes you may not live and work in the same county. I know I definitely don't actually live in Wake County, but this is a little bit harder for communities, especially rural communities or communities that are next to urban counties. So you can't lump these together now. So that's what previously states were doing, because they recognize that people travel long distances to get jobs that actually pay certain wages.
And like all of us, there's a certain amount of math you do when you take a job in terms of the expenses involved in taking that job, whether they're childcare, and I guess you're talking about people without children, or the distances you have to travel for very low-wage jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, essentially, the USDA and the Trump administration is saying that this is really supposed to help promote economic security among these working-age adults that don't have kids. But what it's really doing, though, and we've seen study after study that shows that requiring adults to work at least 20 hours a week, which is what this rule does, they end up taking lower-paying jobs, and they don't get out of their economic current situation. They sometimes even deeper into poverty, and that's essentially which keeps them in the same program.
Makes them more reliant on public assistance because they've taken a job that just doesn't pay enough, and
yeah,
they're out of the workplace, and they may have been performing other services in the community as well. So talk more about, are these just rule changes regarding the waivers, or does it further restrict who can apply for SNAP?
It does not further restrict who can apply for SNAP, but this would would basically state that if you are not working 20 hours a week or if you cannot get a waiver, your state cannot get a waiver, that means you will not be able to get SNAP benefits. Now, we know that SNAP is a very successful program when it comes to reducing food insecurity, also improving health and mental health outcomes. And what I am worried about here is that you know that when people are going hungry, you have other diet-related chronic disease complications that come from this. This is especially seen in areas such as diabetes. If people don't have great diet quality, they can't really control their blood sugar. They go into the hospitals, and actually that rate you're going to pay for going into the ER is probably going to be more than that $1.40 per meal you'd probably be getting from your SNAP benefits.
And you might be talking about people who are uninsured. And mm-hmm. So what we've seen is that people who go uninsured tend to be more out of control, or when they have chronic conditions, they become more costly because they don't have the insurance to bring them back mm-hmm. into physical compliance with themselves and their bodies. So talk more about, you said 750,000 people this would affect nationwide. Do we know what it would be here in North Carolina?
We have not done the math yet so far in North Carolina. We need to see actually which areas and if our state has applied for a waiver and which areas in our state have applied for waivers. But again, I think the important thing, and people need to know, that this proposed rule actually is open to a public comment. So the nice thing about our government is that we have different what I call venues. A colleague of mine at West Virginia University, Dr. Andres, she discusses different venues for policymaking. So you can go through Congress and you can pass bills. You can be the president and sign an executive order. Or you can go through federal agencies and basically pass rules and regulations. So within rules and regulations, they are required to post them to what we call the Federal Register. It is on the government's website, and they are required to have a certain public comment period. So right now, we are waiting to have this public comment period. The government's been shut down. It just reopened. But as soon as they are able to get the public comment up, public, anybody that wants to, individuals, private citizens, organizations can have 60 days to respond to what they think about this rule. So also the important thing to know about public comments is that federal agencies are required to review every single public comment. So if 35,000 comments were submitted in response to this, they would have to read every single one of them, take them to account, and then decide how they want to proceed with this rule.
So there is a chance to weigh in on this still. It's a federal rule. You talked about the government. The fact mm-hmm. is, one branch of government spoke. Congress said, we do not want, they voted on this. House mm-hmm. passed these restrictions, didn't make it through the Senate. Therefore, mm-hmm. the United States Congress said, we don't want these rules. Mm-hmm. We don't want these restrictions. Now the administration is doing that. I guess that's legal, huh?
It is. And I get that question a lot. How can we do this? And it's definitely legal. The USDA is the federal agency that oversees the Farm Bill implementation and the programs in it. So that it's not illegal. They did exactly what they are allowed to do. However, it is a little bit untraditional to have essentially a federal piece of legislation be signed by the president and the same day have a proposed rule that would contradict what Congress and the president just voted on.
Now, this is part of the Farm Bill, and it's a significant part of the Farm Bill. So talk about that. You've talked about the physical health and the public health issues that this raises, but there's also some questions of economic health, particularly in farm country.
Yeah, definitely. And we know that North Carolina is one of the top 10 agricultural producing states in the country. The Farm Bill nutrition programs actually account for 80% of the Farm Bill. And it's not by coincidence. Essentially, for every dollar we invest in the SNAP program, we see $1.79 come out in the economy. So this money goes to retailers, so grocery stores, farmers markets. It also goes to farmers, essentially, for food that they've grown. So it definitely has an economic impact that would impact the individuals that are getting that extra 79 cents that are going back into the economy.
Yeah, it has a multiplier effect. And it is significant that it was, while a Republican House that approved this rule change initially, it was a Republican Senate that rejected it. And so it's mm-hmm. not necessarily breaking along party lines, because of the economic impact this has in rural counties.
Yeah, and also especially the food industry. They were very against any type of proposal that would limit the SNAP participation rates or the number of individuals on the SNAP program. That hurts them, so it can hurt businesses and farmers and especially rural communities.
We've seen this push for a while now, going back to the 90s when with the obliteration essentially of welfare programs mm-hmm. And welfare to work programs. What do we know about this? You talked a little bit about the impact it has had in the SNAP program, but more generally, is it working, the idea that this is making everybody more productive and generating more economic activity?
Yes. Yeah. So essentially, when economists looked at this right after welfare reform was passed in 1996, it did look like it was actually working. But after several years, they started seeing that wages and the jobs people were taking were plateauing. So essentially, it worked for a couple years. People did enter the workforce, but what they didn't do is they didn't get higher education degrees. They were taking lower skilled, lower paying jobs, and essentially we have not seen them benefit from these programs. There have been also studies that show that, one, that more investments in education, so instead of saying go get a job or go do a work training program, why not go to a community college, get an associate's degree, get another higher education degree, because that's actually more correlated with your wages. So if you really want to tackle the economic security issue, you really need to focus on education aspects.
Lindsay Haynes-Maslow is assistant professor and extension specialist in the Department of Agriculture and Human Sciences at North Carolina State University. She's also the principal investigator for NC State's SNAP education program, which is called Steps to Health, that program funded by the USDA, and recently wrote a piece about the proposed rule change for the publication The Conversation. Lindsay, as always, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You can find links to Lindsay's writing at our website and ways to also make comments if you want to comment during the comment period at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a new book documents the stories of a tribe that still survives on subsistence whaling. Author Doug Bach Clark is with us, and we'll talk with him on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.